It's official. Phase one of Governor Baker's plan to reopen Massachusetts has begun. Baker explained earlier today that though the reopening process has started, it's important not to lose sight of the threat the virus still represents, even as new businesses and services become available.
This guidance asks people to change behaviors, and it changes the way some of our favorite places look and feel. This is not permanent. At some point, there will be treatments and ultimately a vaccine. But for the foreseeable future, everyone needs to continue to do the right things to bring the fight to the virus so that we can continue to move forward.
For more, we're joined now by WBUR's Callum Borchers. Callum, thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you, Tusiana.
Now, I know you've been following this all along, Callum, so what was your reaction to what we heard today from the governor?
Well, my initial reaction is that, you know, we're not in a dramatically different place today from where we were yesterday. And I think that's required a real mindset shift for a lot of residents in the state, because I'm mindful that, you know, in the early iterations of orders by Governor Charlie Baker, whether it was the stay-at-home advisory or the essential and non-essential business closures, those had sort of built-in sunsets, right? There were set expiration dates where the veil would be lifted and everybody could immediately go back to their shopping malls and workplaces. And that's not where we are. You know, the final extension was until today, May 18th. And instead of sort of lifting the curtain all at once, we are now in this four-phase gradual recovery plan. And as you heard Governor Baker say just a moment ago, this is going to last for the foreseeable future. It's not forever, but we still have a ways to go.
To underscore your point, rather than some magic, you know, switch that gets flipped, actually only three sectors were specifically named as being able to reopen immediately as of today. Callum, manufacturing, construction, houses of worship. Others will be able to begin to open as soon as next week. But why these three first? And what are some of those others that hopefully by next week are also joining them?
Yeah, good question. I mean, with construction, I think that it's sort of reverting back to the original essential and non-essential order the governor issued. Remember, originally, basically all construction in the state had been deemed essential and could continue. He kind of scaled that back after catching some grief from construction labor unions. But this, in some ways, is a reset, and I think that's why you see construction on the list. In manufacturing, that sort of makes sense because it's not really a customer-facing industry, and we had been hearing hints from the state all along that the first business to reopen would be ones that kind of could easily maintain distance between workers and customers or among workers themselves, where there are no customers walking into a factory. So that's easy. And if you sort of reconfigure the floor, you can keep 6 feet of space between people on the manufacturing floor. So I think that's where that fits. Houses of worship, Tiziana, is kind of the one that doesn't fit right with the other two, but there was so much
right.
I think, political pressure on the governor. And you heard him say again today how difficult and wrenching a decision it was for him to close houses of worship in the first place. And I think that what he's counting on here is folks doing the right thing, you know, showing up, cleaning every surfaces, in between services, keeping their masks on and keeping that 6 feet of distance between one another.
Okay, so for the majority of people who were kind of waiting for today to hear what was going to happen, what the governor was going to say, what really changes? I mean, we know the stay-at-home advisory is now a safer at-home advisory, but what happens for people every day in terms of freedom to move around, where they can shop, et cetera?
Yeah, it's kind of nuanced, right? Safer at home doesn't sound a whole lot different from stay at home. It basically still means stay at home as much as you can, but you can go out. There's basically more options of things to do. A lot of them are outdoors, Tiziana. That's kind of one of the big themes. So you see parks and beaches are among the things that will reopen outdoors beginning next week. More people can go back to work if their workplaces can adhere to health and safety guidelines. So for example, beginning next week on June 25th, office buildings outside of Boston can start to bring back workers who were previously considered non-essential, but only up to 25% capacity. So you still see some of those restrictions built in there. One that stands out to me as a parent, Tiziana, and perhaps to some of our other listeners, is that now we are being asked to limit play dates for our children as opposed to avoiding them altogether. So that might be a welcome, if nuanced, reprieve for parents who have cabin fever-stricken children.
Listeners, we want to hear from you about this as well. Were you able to listen today, or have you caught the headlines? What's your reaction to Governor Baker's reopening plan? What do you think? Is he moving too fast, too slow? And with these new businesses that are beginning to open, especially next week, will you go, or do you in fact feel safer at home? Call us at 1-800-423-1313. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. All right, so Callum, you just talked about playdates. I think people with kids are also really interested to know, what did we hear about childcare and schools?
Yeah, so on the childcare front, we still have daycare centers closed until June 29th. That is an old order that has not changed, although you did hear Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito today emphasizing that there is emergency childcare for folks who need it. This is largely for essential workers, and she also said there's only 35% capacity so far. So there are slots if you fall into that category. They also talked a lot about summer camps, Tiziana, and mentioned that it's possible that summer camps could open in phase two. We don't have a date on when phase two would start. The earliest possible date is June 8th, because we know that each phase is going to last a minimum of 3 weeks. So it's possible that you could have summer camp this summer. The state officials today did not say for sure whether schools will reopen their physical buildings in the fall. They said they will have some more guidance on that soon.
So, Callum, the governor was very, very clear that this whole plan is predicated on people continuing to do four things, right? Social distancing, hand washing, face masks, stay home if you're sick. Did we learn anything today about how the enforcement of those guidelines will work?
Well, we learned a little bit, and I think a lot of the onus is going to fall on workers and customers sort of filing complaints if places of business are not following those rules. You know, I think we've all experienced in recent weeks that, you know, while there are these orders and guidelines out there, you don't have police, you know, sort of roaming the streets and shooing people back indoors. A lot of it is sort of, you know, recommendations that you're hoping people will comply with kind of voluntarily. And I think now we're in a sort of new stage where more businesses are going to begin to open their doors, and there will be more opportunities, I think, for customers and workers to kind of police those public spaces themselves. So what we were told from public officials today was that there will probably be warnings at the outset, then there could be fines, and at the most extreme, there could be cease and desist orders on businesses that are just not complying.
All right, Callum, I want to get some other voices in, so just briefly here, one more question for you before we have you just hold. Biggest takeaway from what you heard today from the governor, what's your sort of theme line from today?
Still a ways to go. I would say that's sort of the theme line. You know, we heard Governor Baker say even last week that they're still ramping up the state's testing capacity. They're aiming for 75,000 tests a day by the end of the year. So that just gives you a sense of how much longer we expect to be confronting the coronavirus. And again, you know, he's talking about a phase four new normal when there's a vaccine. Well, we know that's not coming until 2021. So I think that's something to keep in mind.
Okay. Thanks. Callum, stay right there because I know you're going to stay with us all hour and kind of ride along. I appreciate you doing that. I want to bring a caller in, and then I'm going to pivot from that caller to the next voice who I think can help us with the caller's thoughts. So 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. I've got Miles on the line from Jamaica Plain. Miles, go ahead.
Hey there. Well, I write about urban and rural living and equity for part of my line of work. And obviously, I've been raring to get back out there as much as the next person. But I listened to Baker's reopening plan today and was deeply troubled by it. First of all, we still haven't met the WHO benchmark for case rates and testing. We're still struggling to get PPE to people who need it. And we're still in a plateau here. I mean, what we've done thus far with the last 2 months of sheltering seems to be working. You know, we are no longer at a peak. But this whole thing just feels like premature capitulation to the reopen protesters. I mean, opening houses of worship, public pools in just a matter of weeks. I mean, it's really concerning. And the worst thing is that it's going to be frontline workers and communities of color that have been impacted the hardest by all of this that are likely to pay the steepest price for reopening just a few weeks early. So I'm very concerned about it.
Thanks for that call, Miles. And I understand, actually, I think you do some writing for WBUR's Cognoscenti page, so it's great to hear your voice there. I want to bring in now Dr. Sharon Wright. She is the Senior Medical Director of the Division of Infection Control and Hospital Epidemiology at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Welcome back, Dr. Wright.
Thank you.
So I want to begin by asking you your reaction to Miles's comments there, that this is too much too soon. We are still in too much of a surge, maybe not enough PPE to manage what's coming. What's your reaction to that?
It's an interesting question. I think, you know, we have to start opening up slowly at some point, and there are metrics that are in place to follow, such as number of hospitalizations, number of COVID cases, every healthcare system and practice has to attest to the amount of personal protective equipment that they have in order to meet certain criteria to reopen. So I think it's being done carefully. I think probably we'll all feel uneasy until we see how it goes, but there are protections in place if things start moving slightly in the wrong direction that the next phase could definitely be slowed down.
So let's stay on that for a second, Dr. Wright, because we did hear today that there will be weekly reports on a dashboard of 6 indicators ranging from positive test rates to healthcare system readiness, testing capacity. They'll be rated on a green, yellow, red. And as we go into the reopening today, 4 of those are yellow, only 2 are red. So 1, are those the correct metrics to be tracking? And 2, are you comfortable that where they stand, it made sense to begin phase 1 now?
I think that some of the ones that are in yellow are moving in the right direction. I think it's a balance. So for the public to get out a little bit, the weather's nice, everyone's going stir crazy, and people's mental health is important as well. The things that are getting opened up are things that are largely outdoor, as you mentioned earlier, and for the most part are things where people can maintain a good physical distance. And hopefully people will remember what we've learned over the last many weeks about protecting ourselves. I think that the number of tests and the number of cases are important things to track, as well as the hospitalizations. And hopefully we'll be able to tell from there. The testing capacity in the state is going up with benchmarks to increase significantly over the next month.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join this conversation where we're reacting to the reopening plan we heard from Governor Baker and his team today. We've got Michael on the line from Natick. Michael, go ahead.
Oh, hello. So I've been working actually throughout this entire time as an essential worker delivering electronics. I'm not allowed to disclose of where I work, but I've witnessed a lot of altruism and a lot of people who are just have complete lack of care or consideration for the safety of others, especially with PPE, mainly saying that's their right not to wear it when that's just irresponsible as a person. Now, another thing, too, is a lot of the people that are using PPE are not trained properly on how to do it, how to use it. So I actually really I heard Miles' comment, and I do completely agree with him. Actually, I believe that this is a little premature, especially since a lot of people, it's not made common knowledge or really stressed enough of the proper use of PPE. Put it this way, it's so unbelievably common for people to touch the front of their mask, which you have to consider constantly as contaminated, no matter what, because that's the actual filter of really the air that we're breathing. So if there are any contaminants, they will be on the front of that mask. Now, if you have
Michael,
to,
I appreciate the call.
Sanitize,
so I'm going to stop you there, Michael, just because we have so many callers coming in, and you've got points there that I want to get both of our guests to react to. So I want to start with Dr. Sharon Wright. Well, you know, Governor Baker's been very clear, Dr. Wright, wearing masks is a long game now in the Commonwealth. So how important are they, and what are the basic practices for appropriate mask wearing?
Masks are important because they stop us from touching our face. And also, if I were wearing a mask and I were to cough or sneeze, it would block what I'm coughing or sneezing from getting to the next person, especially if they're within a 6-foot range of me. We don't know how well cloth masks filter, so I hesitate to consider them actual PPE the way we do in a hospital setting. But I do think that they provide some protection and a good reminder for us. The caller is correct. It's important not to touch the outside of your mask. If you do, then to use some hand sanitizer or soap and water to clean your hands. And also to try not to touch around your eyes because you might inoculate yourself. I think the other thing that I often notice is because masks are not all that comfortable is that people often wear them below their nose. And you want to make sure that your nose and mouth are covered while you're wearing it.
All right, let's go to Callum Borchers on this too. Callum, what clarity did we get from the governor today about the types of safety precautions, PPE or not, just masks, if you will, that employers are going to be required to make sure are in place before businesses can reopen?
Yeah, this is going to be a sticky one for companies, Tiziana, because what we heard from the governor today is that the expectation remains that not only workers, but also customers, as a courtesy, when they go into a place of business, will be wearing masks. And you heard that concern from Michael there, who's making deliveries, and he's perturbed when he meets some customer who's sort of, you know, breathing on him and not wearing a mask. And you can understand that concern. And yet the challenge is going to be for a lot of businesses, I think, how do you ensure that there's enough supplies of that. So if you are a restaurant, let's say, when we know that restaurants, for example, are scheduled to be part of the phase two reopening for dine-in seating. So if you wanted to, say, supply masks to all of your customers coming in to eat, assuming they'd have to take it off to actually do the chewing and putting the food in their mouth, but in between, how would you do that? Would you be able to get access to enough supplies? Or if you were a barbershop, let's say, which we know starting next week, they can start making hair appointments. You know, if you wanted to give, gowns to your customers to wear instead of the apron that gets passed from one customer to the next, will you have access to that kind of equipment? And I don't think it's clear that businesses are going to be able to get what they want.
So building on that, Dr. Wright, what are you watching for? What are you going to pay most close attention to as businesses begin to work their way through phase one now?
Be watching as we start doing more testing as well to see how the numbers proceed as people get out and about and start seeing each other more, like you mentioned, with play dates and going more people going back to work, trying to see what's happening there and how much healthcare systems open up. Also with the contact tracing that Massachusetts is doing, if we're able to simultaneously keep the numbers down by reducing transmission through finding contacts of people who they may have been exposed to.
Last question for you, Dr. Wright, and then I know you're busy, so we'll let you go. What's your message to Massachusetts residents as we start this first step towards a long journey back to some kind of new normal?
I think that is the main message, that it's going to be a long journey and this is the first step. So we want to make sure that we get off on the right foot. It's important to remember the importance of physical distancing and wearing a mask, covering your cough, staying home when you're sick, and not rushing to have those big summer barbecues with large numbers of people. We want to make sure that we're all staying safe, but also being realistic that when you're outside, the risk is lower and that we want people to be able to get some sunshine and some exercise and take it one step at a time.
Dr. Sharon Wright, the Senior Medical Director of the Division of Infection Control and Hospital Epidemiology at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center. Dr. Wright, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we're spending this entire hour getting reactions, including yours, to the news from Governor Charlie Baker about the reopening plan today. Now, workers in a couple of key industries are preparing to go back to work this week under Governor Baker's new plan.
The public health metrics that guide this process mean it's possible to reopen manufacturing facilities and construction sites effective today.
WBUR's Callum Borscher stayed with us from before the break, and now we have two additional voices we'd like to bring in. The first is Joe Byrne, the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the North Atlantic States Carpenters Union. Joe, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
And Carlos Aramayo is the president of Unite Here Local 26, which represents workers in hotels, food service, at the airport, and gaming. Carlos, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me again.
And listeners, you, call us with your thoughts, your reactions, even questions for our panelists. You're a part of this conversation all hour. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. So let me start with you, Carlos, and just get your reaction to the governor's plan today.
Yeah, so we have felt very strongly for a number of weeks now that our industry needs to be very cautious and very thoughtful in terms of pursuing reopening. Some hotels have remained open, some industrial food service establishments have remained open, but 95% of our workers are currently out of work, and there's a real balance here. Our workers want to get back to work, but at the same time, they're really nervous and they're really scared that they're not going to be able to get back to a safe environment. And we have been very clear from the beginning that we feel like there needs to be regulations on the hospitality industry. Not only do we need to have more robust testing and more robust contact tracing, but there needs to be access to PPE. There needs to be operational health and safety guidelines and regulations based on the CDC and the WHO that ensure that our hotels are the cleanest hotels, our food service is prepared in such a way that folks are actually engaged in social distancing, wearing masks, a lot of things that was being spoken about before the break. And we feel like that still needs to be worked on. And I know the governor said today that there's a working group that's continuing to talk about that. We're going to be engaged in that conversation. because we have to figure out how to get this right. The last thing we need is another Biogen conference that's going to set our industry back, not 6 months, but maybe 6 years. And we need to be sure,
Carlos,
that we can do that. So.
Great. I'm going to take it back from you there because I want to bring Joe's voice in too. Joe, your union said last month that workers who didn't feel safe on the job should stay home. What about now? Do you think the guidelines that we saw today make construction sites safe for workers?
Yeah, I would say I don't know if necessarily the guidelines make it safe. I would say that, you know, we stopped work a couple of weeks back, and it really allowed us to sort of collaborate with our industry partners in getting a, what we call a COVID-19 safety protocol in place. And I think due to that, I think we're in a much better position than we were a couple of weeks ago as far as going back to work.
And what are you looking for in these next couple of weeks? Like, I'm sure as a union leader, you're going to be gauging whether you think employers are being successful and whether this first phase is being successful. What are you going to be watching for, Joe, as you gauge that?
We're looking to make sure everybody has the proper PPE. We're looking to make sure people are socially distancing. And if they are not able to due to their, their scope of work, that they are exceeding the PPE that they would have to otherwise. We're just looking to make sure we talk to the members and make sure that people feel safe and that the contractors are stepping their game up and providing a safe work environment for everybody.
Let's invite a caller in here, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. We've got Lauren on the line from Somerville. Lauren, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a worry about, okay, so businesses can make 6 feet apart and can put, you know, one-way aisles like they're doing in supermarkets, but getting there, me personally, I would be taking public transit, and I have no clue how, you know, the MBTA is going to be able to make that secure for everybody and limit the way that I would be putting at risk people that then I interface with in every aspect of my life.
Great, Lauren, that's a great question. So I'm going to turn to Callum and then Carlos on this. Callum, can you tell us a little more about what Governor Baker discussed, because he did discuss transit in the MBTA specifically today?
Yeah, he did. And this is another case where there's not sort of a light flip going on where all of a sudden we're back to full service. And so that presents a challenge. There's really two, I think, big hurdles for workers going back to work right now. One is the public transit system, if you rely on that, because the service is not as frequent as it has been and may not be for a little while to come. And the other is childcare, which we discussed closer to the top of the show. If you don't have a place for your kids to go, be it school or daycare or summer camp, it can be really hard. So I think those are going to continue to be big obstacles. And to your caller's point, there's also the health concern for people who are riding the T. It's really hard to maintain physical distance within those tight spaces, particularly on the subway. So I think this is where being really vigilant about cleaning comes into play, and the MBTA has escalated its cleaning regimen. And the other, of course, is the masks that we've been talking about, making sure that everybody on there is wearing masks.
Carlos Aramayo of Unite Here Local 26, as you pointed out, your workers, your union members have been working through this. I imagine that they have been on the T, that they're going to continue to rely on the T, a portion of your membership. What are you hearing from them about their concerns around transit?
Yeah, I think transit has been a major issue, and it's going to continue to be a major issue. I mean, a lot of our members are very concerned about getting onto transit to get to work, and I think even more so as more of the workforce begins to return. The last thing you want to do is be on a crowded bus to go to a stand on a crowded train platform to get onto a crowded train just to be able to get to work when you're trying to maintain social distancing, wear a mask, and do all that sort of thing. Look, frankly, a lot of our workers are black and brown workers who have a lot of pre-existing conditions that make them susceptible to this virus or live in multi-generational households. And this is one of the reasons we, from the very beginning, have been saying people need to be able to volunteer to work or not work. And people who really shouldn't be going to work at this point in time, we got to figure out how to take care of those people while we wait this out. And that's been a guiding principle for us from the very beginning. It's something that we're going to keep pushing our industries to do.
Joe, I want to give you a chance to talk about that same thing. The governor did say today that employers should offer workers for whom it's particularly not safe to return to work the chance not to do so. What is your thought on that, given the carpenters union, the construction union, just your general reactions?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. Look, these are very difficult times. A couple of weeks back, we pulled all of our workers off of jobs in Massachusetts, and we held out for 2 weeks. We thought we needed to take a pause and to make sure that safety protocols were in place, also to make sure contractors had the proper PPE to provide a safe working environment. And after about 2 weeks, we felt like we were in a much better spot. And we made each contractor sort of sign an agreement or a memorandum of understanding with us saying that they would not force any of our members that did not feel safe to go back out to work. So I couldn't agree with them more. I know each industry kind of has to deal with it in their own way. But we feel strongly in that no member should be forced to go back out to work.
Let's bring another caller voice in here, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And I should mention, you can also tweet us at Radio Boston. Margaret's on the line from Charlestown. Margaret, what's on your mind?
So I wanted to comment on a couple of things. First of all, I want to say that I think that we're pretty lucky to be living in Massachusetts, where we've got people who are following science and data and trying to steer us through these incredibly complex times. And I think that the governor and Mary Lou Sutters really deserve our thanks, given the contrast with what's going on south of us in Washington. But I also want to say that I think that, you know, this is incredibly complicated. Many industries, many people, every situation is different. And what we have to do as human beings and as citizens of this Commonwealth is, for goodness sense, have some common sense and some courtesy. You don't want to get other people sick, and you don't want to get sick. So do the things that they're telling you to do every day in every way, and don't be stupid about it, walking around on the street or in parks or whatever without a mask on and standing next to people. It's just dumb, and I think we're better than that.
Margaret, I appreciate that call, and I can hear how strongly you feel about that. Callum, let me start with you. There have been polling numbers over the last several weeks, and the approval rating for Governor Baker's performance has been high, hasn't it?
It has. It's been very high, much higher than the president's, at least here in Massachusetts. And I think that this is sort of Charlie Baker's brand, right? I mean, he's kind of a technocrat. He sort of ran on re-election saying, you know, we don't maybe do big glamorous things or flashy things all the time, but we keep the wheels running. And I think you're seeing that right now, which isn't to say there aren't some frustrations. You know, certainly we've heard, even on this program, TCN, I know that you've spoken with John Hurst at the Mass Retailers Association. That's a group of businesses that's been frustrated with
the
pace.
Too.
Well, there you go. And so you'll hear it from him again, I'm sure, that they're hoping to get even more businesses open. But, you know, also to Margaret's point about leadership, you know, it's a lot of local leadership, too. And you see that again show up today where, you know, you have office buildings outside of Boston that can open up at 25% capacity starting next week. But you heard Mayor Marty Walsh saying last week that that's not going to happen in Boston. And you see the state respecting that and putting a June 1st mark on there. And you've heard the mayor talk about how it's been painful, how he's sort of angered some friends of his. He's a big, you know, labor union guy. Putting down a construction ban was not popular, but he was willing to do it. So I think you see that leadership that Margaret's talking about here.
And Carlos and Joe, what do you need to see next from Governor Baker to be satisfied with the leadership steps he's taking? Joe, why don't you go first?
Well, I think he needs to continue in the path that he's going on. I would argue, I would just say we're sort of blessed being in construction. I think we're a little more geared towards taking this on than your average worker, right? For a lot of construction people, to wear a mask is not outside of the norm. To wear a face shield could be common practice. We're required to wear gloves and glasses on a daily basis. So to sort of have this PPE, for us, it's not much of a jump. But I do think one of the key points for the governor, I think, is to mandate the mask wearing and the separation, the social distancing, I think, is the key. And as some have said earlier on the call, I think some of the obstacles is the mass transit, the child care. Both of those things affect my household, and I know that's going to be an obstacle to people going back to work.
Carlos, how about you? What do you need from the Commonwealth in leadership going forward, from today moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think to pick up on this question of the complexity and diversity of our industries, we're going to need to look for regulations and protocols that address the hotel, the industrial food service, the gaming industry very, very directly. And that's being worked on right now. And that needs to take into account all stakeholders and, frankly, the diversity of the state. The hospitality industry in the Cape and Islands or in the Berkshires is very different than in Greater Boston. I think we heard a little bit about, you know, this sort of difference between office space in Boston versus outside. And I think a similar approach needs to be taken here. And frankly, this is uncharted, very much unlike construction. This is uncharted territory for our industries, and we have one chance to get it right. The last thing we need is the hospitality industry to become another meatpacking industry, and we're going to have to do that by being really smart, by following the science, and having good regulations on the municipal and state level, and hopefully that will be forthcoming as we head into phase two and phase three of the reopening.
But if those things are in place, Carlos, it sounds like you feel confident that this slow return to new normal is possible for your workers.
I think we're going to have to take it one step at a time. And I think we're going to have to, as I said before, testing and tracing expansion is going to be essential. If we don't get that done, I think it's going to be very hard for us to get. Remember, our folks, they're seeing people from the general public, the traveling public from other states, from other countries. If we don't have the testing and tracing infrastructure in place, I frankly don't see how we reopen at all. Hopefully that'll expand. Hopefully we'll have good regulations on cleaning and hygiene and PPE and scheduling and travel and transit and things like that. Hopefully we can get there one step at a time. But frankly, we've got to keep our eye on the numbers. The last thing we need, we've had members of ours pass away and become very, very sick. We don't want that to happen going forward. And at the end of the day, we got to put people's health and safety ahead of corporate profits in this moment.
Thank you for that, Carlos. And Joe, do you remain optimistic?
I do. I mean, I do remain optimistic. I think slow and steady is the key here. As our jobs open up, I mean, that's the path that we're going to take. We're going to do, we've implemented some stuff such as staggered starts, eliminating food service on the jobs, separating lunch and breaks so that there's no gatherings. So I think the idea is kind of, you know, take it slow and steady, see what works, see what doesn't work. And again, it does come back to, the safety of our members.
Joe Byrne is the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the North Atlantic States Carpenters Union. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And Carlos Aramayo, the president of Unite Here Local 26, which represents workers in hotels, food service, airport, and gaming. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and all this hour, we are getting reactions and analysis about Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker's plan to reopen parts of the state's economy. WBUR's Callum Borchers has been with us for the whole hour, remains with us now, and we have a new voice. Here with us now, too, is John Hurst, the president of the Retailers Association of Massachusetts. John, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you, Tiziana. Great to be with you and Callum.
And listeners, keep calling in, 1-800-423-8255, that's 1-800-423-TALK, to share your thoughts, reactions, concerns, questions about what we learned from the governor today about this phased approach to reopening our economy. John, I want to turn to you first and just ask you for your general reaction to the governor's plan today.
Well, I got to be honest with you, we were disappointed and also confused. What was granted to the retailing sector, which was curbside, is frankly something that we've allowed in Massachusetts since the beginning of the COVID crisis for restaurant members. And it's something that states like New York, Connecticut, and New Hampshire have afforded to retailers since the beginning of their COVID crisis. So, you know, we're concerned that we continue to remain about two steps behind our competitive states, you know, at least as it affects retailing. You know, going into this all-important Memorial Day weekend, retail stores are actually going to be open in every other New England state, the last being Connecticut, which opens this coming Wednesday. So they're going to be open in those states, and they're going to be opening some late next week in New York. Yet we're still talking about curbside that has been, frankly, in place for weeks in other states. So, and we're frankly also confused why stores cannot at least have some employees and some customers in there, maybe by appointment only, whether you're a furniture store, a jeweler, a clothing store, a shoe store, a music store. No one's going to buy a piano or a guitar or a bed or a sofa or wedding rings, without seeing and looking at these products. You can't do that curbside. So the fact that we couldn't get at least appointment only is very, very frustrating. Yet,
I can hear that frustration.
Yeah,
John, I can hear that frustration.
And I want
to clarify for you and I are talking over each other. That's okay. Yeah. So just hang on for a second, John, because I do want to clarify for our listeners that what we found for retail is on May 25th, which is Memorial Day, stores are going to be allowed to start offering curbside pickup only retailers. And John, I'm hearing frustration from you that how that compares and contrasts to other states. I'd like to just take a quick time out there to get Callum's reaction to that. Callum has been reporting on that and sort of our comparative or competitive position among other states for a while now. So Callum, let me just get your reactions to what John said so far.
Well, I think one of the things you hear in John's frustration that I've heard elsewhere, too, is that, you know, the curbside pickup is better than nothing, but it's still pretty tough for a lot of mom and pop shops. You know, I had an interesting conversation a week or so ago with Jules Pieri, who runs The Grommet. It's this online marketplace for small businesses. And the reason a lot of sellers like to work with her is that they handle all those logistics. And she made the point to me that it's hard for a lot of small businesses to manage online and telephone orders if that's not something that is a regular part of their business. So while it might sound like a nice thing to say, hey, you know, your local shop, give them a ring or go to their website, put in your order, go pick it up, the logistics of managing that can be tough for small businesses to pull off. And I'm sure that John can speak to that even better than I.
So yeah, no, I've also got a caller here. Go ahead, John.
No question about that. There are some goods that certainly make sense for curbside, but it's also the type of goods that, frankly, we're already buying online or ordering and fulfilling out of stores or fulfilling out of websites. We're concerned about these higher end goods, the things that you want to try on, you want to play, you want to sit on. You just aren't going to buy unless you see it, you feel it, you touch it, and really it's the scientific evidence here at Tusiana that really is very bewilderingly. So, you know, next week you can go get
that,
a haircut.
John?
Well, next week you can go get a haircut. There is no social distancing in that. Next week you can also go back to your office buildings with 25% distancing. Yet you cannot go into a store with perhaps 25% occupancy, or a restaurant, or why is it safer to go get your haircut with absolutely no social distancing? Or why is it safer to be in an office building than it would be, say, in a retail store, a small mom-and-pop shop, particularly if it's just by appointment only?
And just to make a note for our listeners, John, you referenced restaurants. We're nowhere near knowing when restaurants are going to be reopened, actually, for in-restaurant dining as well. John, there's a caller on the line who I think you might be able to help. Her name is Linda. Linda's on the line from Newton. Linda, go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I have a small candy store in Newton. I've been in business for 29 years, and I obviously am close to walk-in customers, but I have been pretty much working every single day for doing deliveries, doing curbside pickup, shipping. So I've been busy because people want to support a small business. I have a lot of supportive customers in the neighborhood. They want to support me. And they also want candy, and they also want to send gifts to people because it makes people happy. But my biggest
Linda, what's
concern
your question?
My biggest concern is when I do reopen to customers, which I don't foresee that happening for me until June, because I can keep up this pace for a while. My concern is, how do I control and make it mandatory if it's not mandatory in the city for someone to wear a mask in the store? Because I'm going to wear a mask and my employees are going to wear a mask. But
so, Linda, that's a great question. And let's turn it over to John and Callum, who I think can give you some information on that. John, let me get a reaction from you first.
It's a great question, and it's one that a lot of our members do ask. And frankly, it's been different town by town. And, you know, some towns actually want you, the retailer, to enforce that, and others don't. You know, we do have concerns in having the retailer enforce that, because we have seen instances out in L.A. and other cities of, frankly, some aggression by consumers. We saw some the incident down on the Cape with a teenager dipping ice cream cones. You know, sometimes people have very short fuses. So we don't like.
You mean people losing patience with the
yeah,
retail associates?
We don't like the employee having to act like a cop or a healthcare enforcer. And the general manager of the MBTA actually said made a good point the other day that even on the T, he has a problem enforcing it on the T because there are folks that have medical conditions that cannot wear a face covering, and they don't have to prove it to you, carry any sort of medical advice to prove that they cannot wear those. So it becomes an issue, you know, of enforcement. I think it's important to put postings up on the door that this is the order, and we would appreciate our customers abiding by it.
So, Callum, let's turn to you here, because the governor did clarify, including things like signage and postings, some real requirements of businesses and customers in order for this to work. Maybe you can help provide a little more clarity there.
Yeah, that's true. I think the tricky thing, though, remains the enforcement. I mean, to John's point, it can put store personnel in a uncomfortable position to kind of be the cop on that and say, hey, you can't be in here without a mask. And plus, a lot of businesses probably don't feel like they're in a position to turn away any business at this point. You sort of see enforcement sort of spotty town by town as well. So while we do have this statewide order that you should wear a face covering in public when you can't maintain 6 feet of physical distance, there isn't really much of an enforcement mechanism there. It's a bit stronger in cities like Cambridge and Somerville, where I believe there's a $300 fine. That's a local municipal fine if you are in public and not wearing a mask. But that is not the case in most cities, and I don't believe it is in Newton, where your caller was ringing from.
All right, let's grab one more call here. We've got Hannah on the line from Somerville. Hannah, go ahead.
Hi, I was calling because I have a question about how the decision of what personal services were included in phase one versus phase two were decided. It, to me, strikes me that there's no real health reason that you could get a haircut before you get your nails done. But it does seem like nail salons are primarily run by women and run by immigrants. So it seems fairly discriminatory without a real health reason for allowing you to get a haircut sooner and open those businesses sooner than nail salons. I think it's probably too
Thanks
early
for
both.
Call,
but
Hannah.
Yeah.
So, John, are you satisfied with the equity considerations and the representation that the advisory board to the governor took into account or their approach on these questions?
Well, I think the caller makes a good point. It's a real head scratcher. I know in states like New York, for instance, getting your haircut is phase two. And by the way, retail openings to some extent are phase one. So because, again, it is, you know, you can't have social distancing. You are going to have physical contact. And I really can't speak to what the difference is between doing someone's nails and doing someone's hair. But there's some real issues. I really don't know how they arrived to these positions, particularly on getting one's hair cut, yet not being able to have some people in your closed retail store. It just doesn't seem to be across the board scientifically based.
And John, last question for you. What are you going to be watching as we begin phase one?
Well, we're going to see, you know, frankly, how our small businesses adapt. We already know that if you sell marijuana, for instance, it's going to be curbside is great. Works fine for you. It also works fine if you sell something that maybe you otherwise would find on Amazon, you know, in known quantities. Unfortunately, we're going to have ongoing problems with some of these other members, you know, music stores, jewelers, furniture stores, apparel stores that frankly have a lot of inventory in their closed stores that they have to pay for, and they just are not permitted to sell under the current guidelines.
That's John Hurst, the president of the Retailers Association of Massachusetts. I know it's a busy time, John. I appreciate you joining us today.
Anytime. Thank you for the invitation.
So, Callum Borchers, WBUR reporter, I want to turn back to you. And, you know, you and I have been together listening to this whole conversation. There are some themes that came forward, and I'd like to get your perspective on a couple of things. First, we've heard callers raise concerns throughout today about, and guests about masks, people who are protesting or resisting wearing masks, concerns about who's going to enforce wearing masks, how to think about the balance between mask orders, public health, and the needs of the economy. Are we getting the balance right here?
I guess we're going to find out soon in the coming weeks, because you know the triggers are in place in this reopening plan to revert to more stringent restrictions if the health data go in the wrong direction. So I think we're going to have that answer pretty quickly. And I think what you're getting at, Tiziana, is this sort of tension that you have between competing interests, which are really, really hard to weigh, right? I mean, there's the physical health that is a little probably easier to measure, but there's also, you know, the mental and emotional health too. You know, I think that the last question about, you know, why can you get a haircut is a good one. And yet, you know, people's physical appearance is, you know, sometimes tied to feeling good, right? And that matters. That, I mean, that is part of people's mental health as well. And I think that that's the balance that the governor is trying to strike right now. The same goes with, you know, religious services that we talked about at the top of the show, right? While that maybe doesn't fit into the same category as construction and manufacturing, the other two things that are reopening immediately, that's a huge part of people's mental and emotional well-being. And so trying to balance those things is really, really tough. And I think that the state's doing the best it can right now.
So the last phase, phase four of the governor's plan, is actually called the new normal. You know, you mentioned earlier that big and bold isn't really Charlie Baker's style. I wonder, are we missing a chance to reevaluate how normal works? Is this actually a chance for bigger, bolder transformational changes on things like transportation or remote work, climate? What are your thoughts?
You know, we might be. I think it's a very valid question, because we're so busy confronting the immediate threat that it can be hard to think about what that new normal, even after phase four, might look like. And I think that the big changes that you might be alluding to there that people are watching are, for example, you know, do we see real policy changes on paid medical leave, for example, right? And this is something we've covered a lot at WBUR. I've covered from the outset that you have this gap in the workforce between people who are able, when they feel a little bit under the weather, to just stay home, know that you're going to get paid anyway, and it helps to keep you healthier and keeps your coworkers healthier. And then there are other workers who don't have that luxury. If they don't show up, they don't get paid. So is that something that we see as part of the new normal? I don't know if that's the case. It's not part of the plan that was laid out today. You know, today's plan was really kind of a public health-oriented plan. It was not a political policy plan. And I think that is something to watch for in the coming months.
That is WBUR's Callum Borchers. Callum, we're going to watch your reporting in the coming months. We'll look forward to having you back on the show. Thanks for being with us today.
Always glad to be with you, Tiziana.